Over the last few weeks, we've been exploring the topic of conditionality. Understanding our experience as conditioned. Understanding that what's arising in this moment isn't random. It's unfolding in a lawful process based on what we've experienced in the past, the choices that we've made, what our kind of culture has been. There's so many different threads of conditions that shape our experience, but every moment of our experience is shaped and shaped in a lawful way. Often at the beginning of our practice, we are seeing the lawful unfolding of habits and patterns of frustration, of anger, of confusion, of desire, of irritation, of boredom, things that are not so pleasant, not so easy to be with, what we could call reactive emotions. And these experiences are shaped, they are conditioned based on our past, based on what we learned, how to respond. And so that's a piece of what we explored some weeks ago, the kind of the shaping of our reactivity, the shaping of our suffering. But also this lawful process, this unfolding lawful process, when the conditions of wisdom, when the conditions of understanding and some of the teachings, the practices that the Buddha offers, when those conditions are met in our lives, those shape us too. And they tend to shape us towards a letting go of that reactivity, a release from that suffering. And so this is also talked about in the Buddhist teachings, a lawful unfolding towards freedom. When we have met the teachings of the Buddha and have gained some kind of confidence in them and are engaged with them. This is what we talked about last week, kind of the turning of the cycle. Habitually in our lives, when we meet suffering, we respond to it in our habitual ways. We respond to it in the ways that we've learned to respond to it, the ways that our parents have responded to it, the ways that we that worked for us as best we knew how when we were growing up. And those patterns became our habits. And so the kind of the habits of how we meet suffering, they get kind of entrenched. And when suffering arises, we tend to come back to those same habitual patterns. And we end up in this cycle, a cycle that is reflected by the teaching of dependent origination. Suffering leads to confusion, leads to that the engagement in our habitual ways of relating to suffering, and then we tend to suffer more because those habitual ways of relating to suffering tend to be suffering ways. But there's this place or kind of a turning that can happen if we hear something, hear a teaching, or somebody points out to us, you know, there might be another way. This was the Buddha's journey. You know, here's this suffering. And is there a way? Is there something? Is there a way out of this suffering? The Buddha had to find it on his own. But having found it, he's offered us a whole set of tools so that we can follow that path. And so if we hear that teaching and it hits us at a moment when we're kind of open to engaging, open to receiving, open to hearing even, open to hearing there might be a way out of this suffering, that leads this whole pattern, this natural unfolding, this lawful unfolding in a different direction. So faith, this kind of inspiration of meeting the teachings, gee, maybe that is something that's useful. And all of you here in this room, in this Zoom room, have that confidence. Have that kind of sense of yes, there is a way because you are engaging. You're already engaging. And so that is stepping into this stream of the lawful unfolding of the direction towards freedom. So, last time I talked about that turn, the turn from suffering, that faith arises not only in dependence on hearing the teachings, but usually in dependence on experiencing suffering. We don't usually look for a way out of suffering without experiencing suffering. And so the suffering is also a condition for this movement towards freedom. Now that's kind of inspiring to me. When I really kind of grokked that or got that. Oh, my phone, I forgot to turn the bell off. I don't know if you can hear it or not. I'll just try to talk through it. When I first got that, when I first grokked that, it's like, oh my gosh, this pathway towards freedom, it begins by understanding suffering. Suffering is a supportive condition for freedom. So whenever suffering arises, I mean, not that we go, yay, suffering, but we can turn that suffering towards the faith and the confidence to engage with it. And it's not like we're caught then. We're right on the path to freedom again. And so this teaching of transcendent dependent origination talks about this lawful unfolding of conditions that lead from suffering to freedom, from suffering to freedom from suffering. And the first one is faith, that we have to actually hear the teaching and begin to engage. So faith in this teaching is not simply kind of sitting back and saying, oh yes, I believe. The faith has to inspire action. It needs to inspire a kind of an engagement, a willingness to step into the path, the teachings, because the wisdom the Buddha offers is engage in these teachings, engage with the mindfulness, engage with the practice. And that is how this path unfolds. That's how these qualities, how the movement on this path is a natural one, bringing mindfulness to experience, exploring, connecting with the teachings of the Buddha, including non-harming, ethical conduct, including generosity, including loving kindness. We all may have different inspirations at the first, when we first meet the practice. Some of us may be drawn to loving kindness. Some of us may be drawn to just engaging with our fellow human beings in an ethical way and in a generous way. Some of us may be inspired to bring the practice of mindfulness right into our direct experience and start exploring. But all of these take us from faith to the next kind of unfolding of conditions on this path, the next lawful unfolding of conditions. The first half of this and the transcendent dependent origination has 12 links in it, just like the dependent origination that describes suffering. And the first half of this path, the first half of the chain, it starts with faith, and then from faith, the natural arising is said to be delight, followed by joy, followed by tranquility, followed by happiness, followed by concentration. So that's a teaching right there, just to recognize that all of those words, they're these emotional words of well-being, different flavors of well-being, delight, joy, tranquility, happiness. And those conditions come from the turning towards the Dharma and engaging with it. And then following that, you know, those conditions support the arising of a stable mind, a mind that is, it's so interesting, I think, to think of the link between happiness and concentration. Happiness is a supportive condition for concentration. That's not what I thought when I first started trying to practice concentration. You know, I thought working really hard is how you got concentrated. But actually, you know, if the mind can be at ease and tranquil and relaxed and joyful and happy, very naturally it moves in the direction of concentration. A stable mind that can then, and I'm going through the links here in a very impressionistic way right now, with that concentration, then the mind begins to open to and receive kind of the nature of our experience as impermanent, unreliable, not self. So this is where the understanding begins to arise. Essentially, where the faith that we had at the beginning begins to be really confirmed, as you know, we understand something experientially. And that actually loops back and strengthens the faith more, which tends to inspire more confidence, which tends to inspire more delight and joy and tranquility and happiness. So this chain has a kind of a delightful strengthening effect on itself. And then as we begin to see the experience as it is, that supports a kind of a disentanglement from the habitual ways that we tend to get caught, the habitual ways we're tied up in suffering. That's not necessarily so obvious on the surface of it, why that happens. But we'll get to that later, later in the, as we explore this in some depth over the next few weeks. So as that disentanglement starts to happen, as those knots of how those habits and patterns are kind of looping back on themselves and tied up in knots and wrapped up, as the mind sees the impermanent, unreliable, not self nature of experience, the mind naturally begins to untangle itself and we begin to experience the freedom, the release from those tangles, the release from that suffering, and understand freedom, understand release, peace, ease in a very deep way. So that's the kind of big picture of the direction, but I want to just take a couple minutes now, hopefully give some time for questions and, you know, kind of talk to just a couple minutes now to explore that, you know, the link between faith or confidence, that engagement, that willingness to engage, that inspiration that, oh, maybe there is something here, and how that follows, how delight follows, how it follows from that. So the engagement or the willingness to engage, I mean, partly some of the delight can come from hearing a teaching, hearing a, somebody saying, yes, I've actually experienced this. You should try this because this has really helped me. You know, that's what happened to me. Somebody sent me a book and said, try this. It's been really useful. It's like, okay, you know, I had some confidence in my friend's expression. And just even that was a little bit of like, oh, maybe there's a possibility. you know, there's a little bit of delight that can be there with the hope that springs up. Somebody else has said they found something, found a way. Maybe it's possible for me too. And so that can be a little bit of delight, a little bit of an opening or a lightening in the heart. So that's one piece of it that we see perhaps there's a possibility, there's a path, a way, something that we can do. And for me, the personal engagement was a delight of it too. That it wasn't just sit back and believe something, but this is something you can do. That was inspiring to me. You know, it's like, I don't just have to wait for somebody, something to come down and like bless me and I'm okay. There's a, you know, an engagement that I can make. That supported my confidence and my sense of delight and willingness. And then that kind of faith or that confidence in, like, for me, it was my friend, you know, it's like, she sent me a book. And so it's like, okay, I'll read this book. What can I get out of it? And willingness to engage. The teachings, it kind of depends on what teachings you hear first, what you might engage with. But there's some basic kind of directions that we might come in to the path with. And generosity is one of those early teachings that the Buddha offers. It's often said to start teaching, especially for lay people, start teaching the path of generosity. And so that's engaging with generosity, what we see as we do this. And so again, you know, the faith to delight kind of movement, I think, happens as we do some practice. As we engage, we start to see kind of the benefit of the doing of it and experience some joy and delight of the doing of it. With generosity, if you're actually paying attention, and if you're noticing what happens when you are engaged in that, there can be some delight before you give something. You know, just thinking about somebody and thinking about what they might like to receive, there can be some delight there. Seeing them receive something, that can bring delight. And later, years later, thinking about it can bring delight. So there's a way in which that practice is intimately connected with the movement towards delight, the practice of generosity. The practice of non-harming, the practice of engaging with ethical conduct, refraining from taking life, refraining from taking what's not given, refraining from harmful speech. These practices of the Eightfold Path, the ethical practices of the Eightfold Path, these are tools that the Buddha is offering us, said these are useful, you should engage with these. And as we start to explore that, engage with non-harming, you know, it really begins to connect us with people. And we also see, we also begin to experience in terms of delight, we might begin to experience what's called the bliss of blamelessness. That we don't have things to regret. We have less to regret because we do kind of make mistakes, of course, but it can be really useful to take some time to remember, you know, for instance, today, have you taken something that wasn't offered? Now, if you have, then there's something to like, oh, what happened there? You know, what happened there? But many days I can go through a day. It's like, no, I didn't intentionally deprive another being of life. I didn't intentionally take what was not given. I didn't intentionally speak harmfully, though there may have been things I said that somebody received with harm, and that is something to reflect on, but that wasn't the intention. So that reflection can bring some kind of open-heartedness and a sense of delight, a sense that, yeah, I'm not intentionally engaging in ways that are creating harm. And the metta practice, another doorway in the practice that the Buddha offers. This is a very close or direct connection to delight and joy. That as we feel that connectedness, as we feel a sense of care and concern for others and also for ourselves, that experience is one of tenderness, of sweetness, of a kind of delight. The quality of metta brings that into our hearts. And then there's the practice of mindfulness itself. All of these explorations around generosity, around non-harming, around metta, they all are bringing in or pulling in. It's helpful, at least, if they are done with mindfulness. If the work on ethics, if the exploration on ethics is just, oh, I should not do this, but you're not actually exploring what's going on inside, it becomes kind of rote at that point. And so the delight will arise as we are engaged with being aware while we practice these things, while we practice generosity, being aware of how it affects us. And also being aware of where it's hard, where we feel, oh, I don't know if I want to give that, so that's kind of what's in the way of that generosity. But then the other piece of the mindfulness, the joy that can arise with mindfulness, is that we can see as we start to bring that mindfulness to those sticky places, to those reactive places, we can begin to directly see how meeting those sticky things, those reactive things with mindfulness creates a different experience and allows some space around them, allows us to not feel quite so stuck to them. And that experience of seeing, oh, this exploration of even with the suffering, being aware of this, right with the suffering, there's a different relationship and a different experience that happens that moves in the direction of well-being. The feeling of a kind of a little bit of spaciousness around the difficulty, we feel a different quality in our hearts. Now, it might not directly feel like delight initially, but it begins to move in that direction with the mindfulness practice, even working with difficulty, working with reactivity. There are times, especially as the mindfulness strengthens, that there can be an absolute delight in, wow, that's what it's like for anger to be arising, and I'm not caught by it in this moment. I'm just seeing it. And that's a delightful experience because we know we're not caught by it anymore. It brings that delight into the mind. So this is a little bit of an encouragement in a way to begin to notice some of the maybe, sometimes I think early in my practice, I wasn't attuned to recognizing some of these wholesome qualities, when delight came up. The more we can actually see them, the more we recognize when we are engaged in generosity or non-harming and experience some of the connectivity or the lightness of heart there, notice that. Take it in, because that actually strengthens this movement, this lawful unfolding in the direction of freedom. These qualities of delight, of joy, of tranquility, of happiness, they are part of the path. They are firmly on the path. And so when they happen in practice, there's no need to feel guilty about that. No, take it in, allow it. Be aware of it, be mindful of it, appreciate it. Appreciate that this too comes with the path of practice. And there are definitely times when it feels like the suffering is what's most obvious and we're not really feeling the delight. But there, in my experience, there's a kind of a there are times when we are kind of oriented towards knowing the suffering, but in that very practice, at a certain point, it can turn towards the recognition of, oh, the mind can know this. The mind isn't caught by this. And so then that recognition of the delight and the joy and the tranquility and the happiness can be there. So, yeah, any thoughts, reflections, questions about this? We'll continue to reflect on this first part in the next time we get together, not next week, but the following week. I think next week I'm going to talk actually about three together, the three of joy, tranquility, and happiness together. What comments or questions? Yeah, David.
Hi, Andrea. Thank you.
Hi.
Your ongoing reference to delight and happiness and seem like at further at the end of that the spectrum of contentment than I that language is unfamiliar to me because I thought what we were going here for here was neutrality and objectivity. And so words like tranquility and caring and open-heartedness and concern are more objective. And I think it's something I'm less likely to become attached to or craving for. Happiness and delight seem like something that might be tempting to cling to. And I wonder if you could, and you did say there at the end, allow yourself to recognize that this is part of the path. Could you elaborate just a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll elaborate more next week too, because be talking a little bit more about those next week, or not next week, but the following week. Yes, definitely we can cling to the happiness and the delight and the joy. And yet the practice, it's like if we are being mindful of them, we can cling to anger or we can be mindful of anger. And when we're mindful of anger, it is not reinforcing the habit of anger. It's not reinforcing that unwholesome quality. It's kind of allowing it, through that neutral kind of exploration. It's allowing it to unwind. When something like happiness arises, yes, there's a tendency to cling to it. We can notice that. And we can also simply notice, oh, this is happiness arising without the clinging. And that experience, when that happens, when it's a wholesome happiness that's arising as a result of, well, the delight of non-harming, for instance, the joy of non-harming, the bliss of blamelessness that the Buddha talks about, that we don't have to cling to that. We may, and we do, and that is something that we also need to see. But the awareness or mindfulness of these arising wholesome states, including joy, including happiness, including delight, it's not reinforcing an unwholesome tendency. It's actually reinforcing wholesomeness to be mindful of it. When we're mindful of it, we will be aware whether we're clinging to it or not. It's not that we have to get rid of the happiness in order not to cling. In fact, the happiness is a part of the path. And if we're throwing out the happiness because we're clinging to it, we're actually missing part of the path. So this is why I do like to talk about this. The Buddha clearly put delight and joy and happiness on the path of freedom. And we may tend to say, gee, better not go there, I'll cling to that. But we have to go through the process of noticing that we cling to it and exploring the letting go of that clinging to it in order for that happiness to grow to full wholesomeness. So it's part of our path to explore those qualities. So yeah,
Great answer, and
an
thank you for
encouragement, yeah.
attaching the word wholesome to happiness. I think that helps me a lot. Wholesome happiness to me has a different flavor than just happiness alone. And
yes, that. This is a specific kind of happiness we're talking about here. It's, you know, it's not happiness of having things. It's not the happiness of I get something. It's the happiness of understanding. And there's different flavors of happiness, actually. There's the happiness of understanding. There's the happiness of non-harming. There's the happiness of connection. There's the happiness of the happiness of others. There's a multiple flavors of that that are wholesome flavors. And we'll cling to those too. We will. And we have to see that. We have to work with that clinging. But the mindfulness of the happiness, well, the great thing about this wise mindfulness, the mindfulness that's just like, oh, this is what's arising right now. This is a human being experiencing happiness. If that's how we're exploring it, it's interesting. That's kind of a neutral, objective observing of the happiness. Oh, this is what it's like to be a human being experiencing happiness. So there's that neutrality there. But that quality of neutral mindfulness tends to strengthen the wholesome quality of happiness, making it more likely to arise in our experience. Yeah. Thanks for the question. And I think we'll probably talk more about that next time.